Good afternoon. I'm Adam Ragusea, and it's time now for Ask the Mayor. Columbus Mayor Fred Armstrong could not be with us this afternoon, but he has sent one of his right-hand men to be with us. We're going to be speaking with Jim Klaus, who is program manager in the Columbus Office of Community Development. And he'll be here to answer any questions that you might have. But I do like these shows when we get to talk with folks about some more specific aspects of municipal operations. But we want to extend a special invitation to our Columbus and Bartholomew County listeners to join the conversation this afternoon. The number to call is toll-free 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. And you can also send an instant message to screen name WFIU Mayor. That phone number again is 877-285-9348. So, Jim, where is the mayor today? He's chatting it up with the Kelly School of Business folks in Indianapolis, right?
Exactly. Yeah, he accepted that invitation back in January, I believe. And so I'm pitch hitting for him today.
Well, we're delighted to have you with us. So, Jim, you're essentially, and we mentioned this before, but you're essentially the mayor's liaison to the Columbus local business community. What do you do in that capacity?
Help out local business as I can in relation to what government can do for them and what City Hall can do to help them with their expansions or helping with, and this isn't exactly my forte, but I can help direct them to the proper offices and things of that nature, helping them with permitting and just in general answering questions. As far as the lion's share of what I do in helping businesses within City Hall is just tax abatements, taking their request for tax abatement, doing all the making sure that everything is done as it should be to meet state statutes, drafting the resolution, communicating with all the council members and the subcommittee called the Incentive Review Committee that we have that reviews their eligibility to receive the tax abatement before it actually goes to council. And then after they receive the tax abatement, then we annually go through a reporting process where we monitor their, call it compliance, basically just making sure that they keep the promises that they made when they got the tax abatement and, relation to job creation and things of that nature.
Now, I think you assumed this mantle in 2006, right?
Yes, I believe so.
What had you done with the city prior to that?
Before that, I was my title was Special Projects Manager, and I did a little bit of everything, to be honest. Was brought on to help with some projects that dealt mainly with low to moderate income individuals, helping out using some HUD money to put in some furnaces in homes for people that had furnace or heating systems that were non-functioning or in some cases actually dangerous to themselves in the neighborhoods. And we have since expanded that. We use our CDBG dollars right now to do that. And we have a program.
CGBD, can you spell that out for us?
CDBG stands for Community Development Block Grant.
Right.
And back in the 70s, they wisely decided that local communities can better ascertain and spend some of the funds to do these kind of projects better than local government, instead of basically going to Congress every time you want to do a project, just saying, here's a block of money, and as long as it meets certain criteria and stays within certain parameters, you guys have the ability and the responsibility to use it however you want. And so we are an entitlement city, as Bloomington is, one of a few in Indiana. Entitlement cities and entitlement areas are 50,000 population or greater, and we think we're in our fourth year of being an entitlement city, which means that we get a set amount of money every year from the department, the Housing and Urban Development Department. So we are using some of that money to do a program called CHIP, which stands for Columbus Housing Improvement Program. And we do the furnace replacement like before, but we've also expanded that into cooling systems because as we got into it, we found that, once you put a new high-efficiency gas furnace or heat pump into somebody's house, the next step up to central air is real minimal.
Yeah,
and
right,
a lot of people these days, especially with the hot summers and a lot of the allergies. And a lot of our clients are senior citizens.
Sure, and the elderly have just as many problems with the heat as they do with the cold.
Exactly. So we expanded that to include central air conditioning. And we also do roof repair. And that is a very popular program. It seems to increase in popularity every year, I think, as more people become acquainted with it. And a lot of it, too, is since we don't use any of the money for marketing and promotion of it, we rely strictly on entities like WFIU and other media to get the word out through public service announcements. It's a little slow going, but I think as people find out their neighbors have gotten a roof through this program or a new furnace, then, you know, it's word of mouth is working quite well.
Well, you've just had your hands all over all kinds of aspects of city operations, so I'm glad to have you with us. Let's go back to talk about tax abatements. You know, as I do this show and I talk to mayors of communities throughout the southern and central Indiana, a lot of them will use Columbus as a model in describing what they'd like to be doing with their own economic development initiatives. And yet tax abatement remains one of the most controversial topics in municipal government. In your capacity, do you serve as a gatekeeper towards for a tax abatement? Do you initially assess whether or not it takes a company is worthy or deserving of a tax abatement, or do you just kind of work out the process of application and then leave it up to the city council and the mayor to decide what to do with it?
Well, actually, Adam, a little bit of both, but in reality, the latter. I just walk them through the process and then take the application before city council, and then city council is the one that actually makes the determination. However, if a business really is not eligible, now there are some statutorily they are not eligible. You know, they call up and I say, you can't do that because the state statute will not allow it. You know, and you're going to be embarrassed by going before city council asking for this. So why bother? There are other things like, it has to be in an economic revitalization area first, so sometimes it might take more than just a single appearance before city council to get the job done, so I help walk them through that process. A good example would be we recently had a project that actually is still kind of in the pipeline. It's an industrial park that's kind of an expansion or an annex to an existing successful industrial park we have in Columbus called Woodside Northwest. And the Woodside Industrial Park is the original. Some land was purchased, and a company decided to move in there. And through the whole process, we had to kind of work with the developers, the realtors, the landowners, as well as the business that was planning to expand there. And the annex to the industrial park is going to be big enough that there are other lots that will be developed as time goes on. And then, of course, our department had to fold in the planning department and the engineering department here in town and work with everybody to get it rezoned. And we'll get it first, because it was in the county, we had to get it first annexed into the city. Then, once it was annexed, that had to be rezoned, and we had to get it designated as an economic revitalization area. Do all that before it could even be eligible for a tax abatement.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of not instrumental, but involved in that whole process and just making sure that, okay, now we can finally look at getting a tax abatement for you. And, there are some instances like that. There are others where the area is already in an ERA, and it's just as simple as filling out an application and them going before the city council, pleading their case, and receiving a tax abatement.
Well, let's go back to what seems to be the community development project of the decade in Columbus, if not the early part of the 21st century, which is what's going on with the Commons Mall and everything that's happening with Cummins there. What precisely, and if you could quantify for us in all the different aspects of it, what precisely is the city of Columbus putting forward in public dollars as part of that new Cummins facility that'll be part of the Commons?
For the Cummins facility?
Yes, and the associated parking garage.
As far as I know, I'm a little bit at arm's length on this, but as far as I know, the city will be contributing $4 million toward the parking garage. The actual office building is a private development through an organization called Commons Office Partners, LLC, out of Indianapolis. They are actually, and that's the same, actually it's a subsidiary of the organization that is putting in the Hotel Indigo and will be putting in the Candlewood Suites in that same area. So that is all of that is a private development, and the city is not involved at all, short of city council did a few weeks ago grant a tax abatement, a 6-year tax abatement. Normally on a project like that, it would be 10 years. Through a compromise achieved through the Redevelopment Commission, City Council, and Commons Office Partners, they decided to ratchet it down, if you will, to a 6-year tax abatement. The benefit of that is going to, it's called a pass-through. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the developer won't actually realize that money will be passed down to Cummins, so they receive the benefit of that tax abatement. And that's an arrangement that's just between the developer who is leasing that space to Cummins Incorporated. Right. Now, the parking garage, last I heard, it's estimated at about $8 million, and half of that is coming from casino dollars, and then the other half will be from the city.
I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking to Jim Klaus, who is program manager in the Office of Community Development for the City of Columbus. He's sitting in for Columbus Mayor Fred Armstrong here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a phone call at toll-free 877-285-9348. Or if you prefer, you can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. Now, Jim, let me ask you, how does one go about justifying the need for an abatement? And let's use this most recent case as an example. Cummins, obviously an extraordinarily successful corporation. I think they're posting a net income for 2007 in the neighborhood of $1 billion. Uh-huh. What makes you think that they need it?
Well, actually, that's not my determination. That's city council, unfortunately. But I know that the program, the tax abatement program, is used as an incentive program, actually statewide. And it was more my understanding, or at least the case that was presented before City Council by Commons Office Partners, was that Columbus was in competition with several other cities to get this office complex. Cummins needed to expand. They needed to bring in these engineers and these other employees to run their business. It wasn't just an altruistic thing on their part to benefit the community. It was actually,
you mean these people are in the business of making money? What are you talking about?
And so they were basically using this as an incentive to basically tilt the scales toward this, bringing this office complex to Columbus as opposed to another city or another state, or even, with the global economy the way it is, doesn't even necessarily, those jobs don't really even have to be here in America. So it was just one of the feathers in the cap that was used to put the whole package together to cement the deal and make sure that Cummins did, in fact, locate those jobs here and not in Chicago or New York or Nashville, Tennessee, or someplace like that.
And I know that you're someone who works in the implementation and the nuts and bolts of these kinds of deals and not so much in the policy, but do you ever fear that maybe Columbus and some of its competing cities, especially nearby in the Midwest, like Louisville, are locked in a bit of an arms race with these kinds of things?
You know, sometimes it kind of seems that way, but I guess that's just the way of the world, or one of the realities of the economy the way it is now. People are, and it used to just be, I heard Mayor Armstrong, as a matter of fact, at the very hearing for this tax abatement, he mentioned the fact that it used to be that Columbus was just in competition regarding industries like this within our own region. And now it's not even necessarily just different cities within the state. It's different states within the country and any place else in the world. I mean, things are outsourced now. One of the much to the chagrin of a lot of people that are losing the manufacturing jobs. I mean, we are in competition with different countries now because so many things are being outsourced.
Mm-hmm. And Columbus has just been to a great extent, the Rust Belt success story over the last couple of decades.
And I think, Adam, a lot of that has to do with a plan that was put in place that actually was kind of kickstarted back in the 80s.
Sure,
when
the internationalization.
Exactly. And looking at, okay, what countries are the developing economies now? We need to go over there and court that business and make sure that we're not on the outside looking in. And so far, it's proved successful.
Jim, can you give me an example of a time in the history of your work here in Columbus when an abatement didn't work out? And what was – you don't have to – you can use pseudonyms to protect the innocent. But give us an idea of what happens to make these things not work out.
Well, as far as one example that comes to mind is a particular business that had received a tax abatement and was here in Columbus and Bartholomew County through most of, I'd say, well over half of the abatement period, and received those benefits, and still created the jobs and you know, met their end of the bargain as far as that goes. But then near the end of the abatement, decided to relocate to another county because they got the bigger, better deal.
So what happens when that happens?
They did not receive the balance of their tax abatement.
Okay.
Because they weren't even
in the county anymore.
Yeah. So, but as far as I know, that tax abatement did not and wasn't even eligible for being relocated. Although I believe in talking to the state that is a possibility if another county wants to pursue that, if they want to. Transfer, I guess, is for lack
sure,
of
yeah,
a better
makes sense if it's a state program, then yeah.
But it just that didn't work out real well for the county. In the short term, it did because there was job growth. People were receiving paychecks that necessarily wouldn't have in our county.
Yeah, and you saw tax revenue through the income, but not from the business itself.
Exactly. And when the tax abatement entered a period where we're starting to roll off and the county was starting to get the receipts from that increased assessed valuation, then all of a sudden the equipment and the real property, well, the real property still here, but the equipment and all that was gone. So in that case, it didn't work out. Another example would be this was a whole nother function of business, but when a business loses a contract. For instance, a factory secures a contract from, say, a car manufacturer to create wheels or axles or whatever, and then the car manufacturer in Detroit or Japan or wherever, they scale back production of these models or they lose business themselves. Then they cancel the contract for this business, and you know, at that point it doesn't work out.
That's interesting, because then the business is not able to fulfill its terms of the abatement, but through no fault of its own.
Exactly.
So what do you do?
Exactly, and that's exactly why City Council has set up a mechanism. Actually, it's the Incentive Review Committee has set up a mechanism to review, just not necessarily blanket. You guys, you said you'd create 100 jobs, and initially you did. You created 110 jobs, but now you've scaled that back to 30 jobs. You're not in compliance anymore. Why should we continue to grant this tax abatement to you guys? And so they can come in and they can review the plead their case before the Incentive Review Committee, and they'll review the case and say, you know, you're right. It's no fault of your own. You're doing everything that you can to try and recapture business because it's in your best interest too. You know, rehire these employees, bring those employment levels back up. So we will grant your noncompliance. Actually, it's called a waiver of noncompliance. So, and they have the mechanism to do that because that's not fair either.
Sure, yeah.
If they have to go back and to my knowledge, there's never been what's called a clawback where you guys haven't met your end of the bargain with this tax abatement, so we're going to go back. And, yes, you didn't pay taxes for 3 years, so we're going to go back and recapture all this money. To my knowledge, that hasn't been done.
I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Jim Klaus. He's program manager in the Community Development Office for the City of Columbus. He's sitting in for Columbus Mayor Fred Armstrong, who's up in Indianapolis today. Let's go to the phones. We've got Dennis calling from Columbus. Hi, Dennis. What's your question?
Hello, Adam. Hello, Jim. listening to Fresh Air in this very time slot a month or so ago, and of course I can't remember the guy that Terry Gross was interviewing, but he...
Well, thank you for doing the cross-promotion for us, though. That was terrific. Sorry, go ahead, Dennis.
He had sort of sampled tax abatements at communities around the country and found a lot of what I would consider, as a property taxpayer, I would consider it abuse. Not just property tax included in the abatement, but sales tax and direct cash payments and the like. I'm wondering, well, I attended a city council meeting a month or so ago and heard Toyota ask for and receive a $3.1 million abatement that would create, I believe it was 10 jobs. I guess my question would be, is that entirely property tax forgiveness?
It depends on, there are two types. There's real property, and then there's personal property. And these projects, sometimes they'll come in with just a request to phase in the real property taxes. Sometimes it'll be just personal or both. The relief comes in, like I said, just phasing in of property taxes. The first year, they will get a relief of the assessed valuation only on the new real property being constructed or the new equipment being brought in. Nothing, no taxes that they pay currently are ever reduced in relation to the tax abatement. It's just you don't pay the tax on the increased assessed valuation the first year. Then the next year you pay, say 85% is deducted, and you'll pay 15%. Then the next year, you'll pay 25 or 30%, and then it's a graduated scale till the 10th year. Then you're paying 100% of assessed valuation. Did that answer your question?
Okay. So in this case, it was entirely property tax, either personal or business. Nothing more than that.
Right.
It
right.
sounded like a large number, but it's over 10 years, I guess.
Oh, the Toyota one you're referring to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they, and I don't remember exactly, and I filed that away, exactly if that was personal property or real property.
Yeah, not sales tax, no cash payments.
No, in Columbus, we only deal with personal property and real property.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't abate any sales tax or anything like that.
Okay. Thank you, gents.
Okie dokie. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the phone call, Dennis. Let's see, we've got about 6 minutes left in the program. We're speaking with Jim Klaus. He's Program Manager for Community Development in Columbus, and the phone number to call to speak with him is toll-free 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. Jim, let's move on to a different topic.
Okay.
And talk about all of the legislative stuff. As you know, Mayor Armstrong just hates talking about the legislature.
Oh, yes. and
he made a vehement and compelling case last time he was on the program against the system of proposed caps that is being bandied about the legislature at this point.
Right.
But the major development that's occurred since then was an initiative, a push by House Democrats to associate the homestead cap with income rather than assessed valuation.
Right.
What does the mayor think about that?
You know, I haven't had a chance to talk to him much about that particular issue. To get a good feel for how he feels about that,
sure.
I would say that it's his whole position on the cap is, you know, there's something needs to be done regarding property tax relief. But some of the ideas that are being bantered about haven't exactly been debated enough, and the ramifications, I guess I have to say, the unintended consequences, mm-hmm. I don't think those, he believes those haven't been explored enough and just wants to make sure that if they institute property tax relief and the circuit breaker caps, be they the 1% of income, 1% of property value, or whatever it is, wants to make sure that municipalities are not penalized as a result of this, or conversely, taxes aren't just—it's not just a shell game—and you get property tax reduced, but then that tax is just shifted over into some other arena. I know I did talk to him briefly about the benefit. Nobody likes property taxes, but at least you get to deduct that from your federal income tax. Sales tax, you wouldn't be able to if that money was just shifted over to, for instance, an increased sales tax.
That's an interesting point. I haven't heard anyone point that out yet. Yeah.
So it's in short, if I could just sum it up in one sentence, basically I think what he's pleading is just think about this before you do it. I read an interesting snippet, an excerpt from an article from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, I believe it was this morning, mm-hmm. and they were talking about that very issue. And whoever authored the small piece, because I don't remember them crediting that, actually, but the line was for the circuit breaker caps, it addresses the issue of property taxes, which needs reforming, but it does nothing to fix the problem. It addresses it, but doesn't fix it. And it's instituting spending reductions on local units of government by force and not through efficiency, which I thought, well, that's an interesting take.
Sure. At the same time, though, you know, and obviously the mayor or someone working in the office has run the numbers on the caps and determined that Columbus stands to lose quite a bit of revenue, a big chunk of its budget, if the caps were to be instituted as proposed.
Yes. Yeah.
On the other hand, I think I could imagine – I hate to keep bringing it back to tax abatements, but I could imagine a legislator like Luke Kenley kind of turning around and saying, well, Columbus, you made your own bed with that by handing out all these tax abatements.
And
how would you refute that?
how I would refute it is a good example is the tax rate in Columbus for just the amount of money that the city receives per $100 of assessed valuation has gone down, has decreased. This would be the third year in a row that has actually decreased. As a matter of fact, Columbus residents pay less per $100 of assessed valuation now than when Mayor Armstrong took office.
Hmm.
So I think that Mayor Armstrong's position is that the city has done its level best to be ahead of the game and just work on efficiencies, not because we had to, but because it was the right thing to do. And we've already cut the budgets and we're operating pretty efficiently. There might be, a couple of things here or there, but it certainly doesn't, if those things are cut, that it's not even going to approach the amount of money that the city's going to lose if they do institute these caps and all this reform legislation does come to fruition. At least that's my understanding of it. And his point is don't penalize us because we've done the right thing and we've been operating as lean as we possibly can, and now you're telling us that we have to operate with even less money and there's no way to correct the situation. And that was another one of his positions is, and that's fine. If you want to impose the caps, you want to reform property tax, then just give the cities and the counties another vehicle to try and
raise revenue itself.
Exactly, sure, yeah. Raise revenue ourselves.
We've got just about a minute left in the program, and it's interesting to think that the next time we talk to the mayor, basically all of this will have shaken out.
Yeah.
Because that'll be past that magic March 14th deadline for the legislature to finish up this work. Just in 30 seconds, Jim, what's happening with this new community garden in Columbus?
We are hoping to open that up now. Of course, the weather is not cooperating at all.
Not so much, yeah.
But we have a plot that's out by it's on the grounds of the municipal airport that we open up for members of the community to have little plots and do some gardening out there. We are actually giving an opportunity up through this Friday for the people that have had plots in the past to re-reserve those, if you will. Starting Monday, people that are new to the community garden system can come and get a plot.
We're going to have to leave it there, though, Jim.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate your time so much for speaking with us. This has been Ask the Mayor with Jim Klaus. He's the program manager in community development for the city of Columbus. I'm Adam Ragusa. Join us again next week. Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett will be our guest.